It's Wednesday, February 8th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight we talk about Ninku and Masuda Kosuke Theater, Gag Manga Biori.
Let's do this!
Man, I had a meeting today at work, and all I have to say is that it seems like most adults in this world don't know how to, actually confront each other or talk about problems in an adult professional manner.
It's because they forgot how to talk? I don't know.
It's kind of annoying. I sat through a meeting, and I can't really get into the details, but basically, a lot of companies will have managers, like they'll have an anonymous survey where you rate how well your manager's doing, blah, 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 and then the manager gets, like, these statistics of, well, some people say this and some people say this.
All right.
And it's supposed to help teamwork and whatever. So imagine if your manager gets that, and then you have a meeting, and you got to sit there while the manager talks about the results of the survey, and then all the people want to give their criticism to the manager without actually criticizing the managers. Everyone's kind of dancing around the issue, and everyone keeps saying things like, oh, well, not to speak of you specifically, but in general, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful. Oh, my God.
Why didn't you just say this and this and this and this and this?
Because I have no problems with my manager at all.
But why do these people have problems?
Honestly, the funniest thing was that the biggest complaint people seem to have in a lot of companies is that they're not appreciated. And they want, like, in these intangibles, like, someone to just tell me I did a good job or appreciate me. And that's not something I can relate to. Honestly, if you appreciate me, give me more money. That's all I care about. If you'll pay me $100,000 a year to sit on my ass in an office doing nothing, I'll take the money and I'll work on something else. But money is the only reason I'm at my job.
Yeah, I get plenty of money. But the thing is, it's like sitting there all day doing nothing. It's like sometimes I feel like, you know, I should be doing something because they're paying me.
See, here's the way I look at it.
And then if they don't pay attention to me, it's like, why are they paying me? And it's not so much that I'm bothered that, you know, I don't have to do any work or that, you know, there isn't a whole lot of work to do. It's just like this, what are they thinking? It's all weird and mysterious, and it's kind of like,
Well, see, to me, if I'm sitting, like, say I end up with a few hours with nothing to do at work at all, like, absolutely nothing, for whatever reason, maybe I'm waiting for someone's crap or whatever, I'll spend that time just learning about something.
Yeah, that's one thing. If, like, on a day of work, I have a few hours with nothing to do, that's, you know, obvious. It's like, oh, I finished something, you know, then I have to wait for something to happen, so I've got a few hours. And I'd feel fine doing whatever I want during those hours, you know? But what if it's weeks and weeks and weeks and there's nothing?
I had that happen a lot when I worked for RIT's IT department. Because most of my job was scheduling things and then doing those things. And I had no responsibilities outside of doing those scheduled things. So I had weeks at a time where, other than a couple of appointments here and there, they were paying me to just do nothing. I just did my homework, or I slept, or...
What if it was a full-time job? You did it all day, every day, and for weeks upon weeks, they just... No one really paid attention to you or asked you what you were doing or gave you anything to do or asked anything of you or did anything for you. You just sat there and whatever.
Honestly, if that actually happened to me and I had a job like that, I'd probably be generally looking for a job elsewhere just in case, because I'd be worried that they were going to fire me. And that's,
but
why,
see, that's the thing is, and then they give you more money and move you to a new office.
You know what? That's fine.
Yeah, but it's like I feel bad if I start working on something else. And I do kind of have work to do. It's like I got this one thing to do that's like so trivial, it's like I don't even want to look at it, you know? And I have this other thing to do where I 99% finished it, and I just have to fix one bug and it's done. And it's just like I really don't feel like doing it, because if I did it, there would be one less thing I have to do in my queue. And then I have this giant project which I want to work on, but they haven't given me the final spec. And I've already read all the documentation they've given me, and already know everything there is to know about it, short of, you know, the actual instructions about what they really want me to do. And no one's talked to me about it since giving me... They basically just gave me the documentation and haven't said a thing about it since.
See, that's the one thing that does get to me, is a lot of times I'll have work I could do. You know, I'm all ready to do something, but I'm waiting for some idiot somewhere else to get their act together before I can do it.
But see, the real problem here isn't the fact that I'm waiting. It would be fine if I knew that, say, someone, you know, was planning to give me the stuff I needed, and I was just waiting for them to do it. Because then it'd be like, okay, I'm stuck here waiting for this guy, and I would feel just fine working on my own whatever. But when they haven't even communicated anything to me at all, they didn't say, we're going to get it to you. They didn't say, it's coming. They didn't say, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. They just said absolutely nothing. No words whatsoever. I have no information. All I have is these documents. He said, you have a new project. Here's documents. That's it.
Well, I mean, at least thank yourself that you're not in IT. Because a lot of IT work, if you're just a system administrator, you're not going to do a lot of proactive work. Because once all that's done, if there isn't a project on the horizon, there's not much to do. So you honestly spend a lot of your time kind of sitting around being ready to deal with things if they break.
But see, that's fine. Because then at least I would know... For sure, my job is to sit around and wait for things to break, which means I'm not supposed to be doing anything now. But it feels like I'm supposed to be doing something, but I'm not sure, or maybe...
Well, you know, I guess my take on that is that there have been
like
many times...
It's like the fact that I could have finished some of these things that I'm doing, like the thing that I'm 99% done with, I probably could have finished it weeks upon weeks ago. The fact that no one seems to care that it's not done, and no one's even asked about it, is like, does it not matter?
Maybe what often scares me is when I'll finish a project, and I think I've done it really slowly and terribly. Like, I just kind of put a half-ass into it. Like, I didn't do a good job. Or it took way longer than it should have. And people still praise me, like, wow, that was awesome. None of us could have done that.
Wow.
Yeah. My job's kind of interesting sometimes.
But I think the people at my work know how long it takes to do stuff. They wouldn't be, you know, they're not really amazed or anything.
I'll freely admit that the people at my work have no idea how long things should take to do.
I mean, the stuff that I finished, they said, yeah, you did a good job, because I did do a good job. You know, I took my time and, you know, did things right. I wasn't in a big rush or anything, but, you know, they don't seem to, it's like, I don't know why they're paying me, and they seem to think highly of me, and, you know, they're nice to me, but I don't understand why they keep paying me more, because I don't feel my work is really,
I don't think
I do anything valuable to them. I think I just take their money from them.
Honestly, in America, I'm pretty sure that our entire economy is based on the fact that everyone does things really inefficiently. And if any company actually did things efficiently, there wouldn't be any jobs.
Yeah, but, I mean, I could do my job.
I mean, I honestly, aside from some of the application development, I'd say I've met at least 40 or 50 people in the course of the last year working where I work. People who just don't need to exist and their job could be done by a computer or by me in my spare time.
Yeah, but it's like, if I really wanted to, really, and just did it, and I had the specs for the project, I could finish that project in maybe a month, you know, if I did it really well, maybe. And I could do the stuff, you know, the other two things I have to do in like a day. Just like, oop, they're done. And then I'd have nothing to do at all.
I guess don't look a gift horse in the mouth. I mean, there are people who would kill to have a job like that.
Yeah, but I sit alone in this office all day, like, banging my head against the wall.
What do you mean? You sit alone in your office all day instant messaging me while I'm trying to do work.
Because I had nothing else to do to keep myself from going insane, sitting in this empty office.
You know what? Most people sit in that office for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I'm going to get out of this office as soon as I drain enough money out of it.
Yeah, or maybe Geek Nights will become popular and syndicated.
I don't think so, but... You know, it's kind of like a Puerto Rico game, you know? You got to... I keep using this small market until I get enough doubloons to buy the university. Then I'm out of here.
So anyway, tell us about Songbird, Scott.
We all know about Firefox, Thunderbird, and what's the other one?
Oh, I don't know.
Sunbird, I think.
Sunbird, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's the one with the calendar. Anyway, there's a new one. I don't think it's actually made by Mozilla, but if it turns out to be good, Mozilla will probably absorb it. It's called Songbird. It's basically iTunes built on the Firefox engine, but it's not actually iTunes. It's an iTunes replacement.
Now, I'll warn you guys right now that this isn't a finished product at all.
Yeah, this is like version 0.1 alpha something. It's not really useful yet. I wouldn't use it.
All I can say about it is that it looks like it has potential.
Yeah. If you go, it looks like black iTunes, and on the left side of the screen, you've got links to pretty much every source of music other than, you know, iTunes.
You know, yeah, like every podcast aggregator, Amazon, everything.
In the middle there, you've got basically what amounts to a Firefox web browser, but it's very trimmed down, so you just, like, view controls for things in it, you know, and the websites that you buy music from, just like iTunes, you know, the music store, it appears in this big kind of browsery window. And then in the menus, it plays music. It can play all kinds of music, any audio files and whatever. And at the top, there's controls to, like, create smart playlists and manage your audio library and, you know, handle any devices you have. I don't think that works yet.
Nothing seems to really work so well.
Yeah. And
in fact, I recall earlier you told me you were going to show it to me, and then it opened off the screen and you couldn't get it back.
Well, I think that was partly because I was using two monitors at work, but it's also partly because of the program. But yeah, it's also big and slow right now.
I guess keep an eye on it and give it time. I'd really like to see something to compete with iTunes that would actually work well.
Yeah, I think if they come out, because it's Mozilla Zool stuff, so there's no reason it shouldn't run on all the platforms. If they can really get some Firefox-style quality in there, I think they can beat iTunes, especially if they have, you know, proper MP3 player and iPod support and proper podcast subscribing action and library management. If they can get those three things, they can really take over.
All right. So in other news, NASA.
NASA.
Anyway.
1957.
Oh, 58. Yes, that, dear listeners, was an inside joke.
You'll find out about it later if you don't know it already.
Yeah, we're probably going to make it a thing of the day because it's funny how sometimes a thing or a joke that or just a thing we see on the internet will be immune to it and it'll disappear and we'll forget about it. But sometimes we just latch on to something and quote it infinitely for, you know, a year or two, and then we forget about it.
All right, so NASA.
Yeah,
the
NASA.
Real NASA.
So George C. Deutsch of NASA was not the best dude. He was working for NASA, and he was a very high-up kind of guy there. He had the power to squelch research and direct scientists and that sort of thing.
What was the name of his position?
So our good friend George was appointed by our other good friend George, as in George Bush, as a writer and editor, a presidential appointee at NASA. And one, he claimed to have graduated from Texas A&M, which actually was discovered by some bloggers to be a falsehood, if you will.
He dropped out of Texas A&M.
Yes. In fact, he dropped out, if I may, to work on George W. Bush's election campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Fancy that, and then somehow we got appointed to NASA.
Maybe I should join some people's election campaigns so I can get appointed to things.
Yeah.
I think I'll do that.
So he lied about having a degree, and this probably wouldn't have mattered, except that he brought a bunch of attention to himself when, among other things, he was trying to muzzle James Hansen, a scientist at NASA, concerning his research on global warming and the fact that it's actually happening.
So as writing and editing, he edited and wrote things that concealed or did not include research which NASA was doing?
Yeah, that, and it looks like he was trying to outright not let this guy publish his papers, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, does he have to publish them through the NASA public whatever
office?
Yeah,
I really don't know. I don't know much about the inner workings of NASA.
Yeah,
I mean, I went to space camp when I was a little kid. And
yeah, it seems to me like this guy was sort of like a middleman for people in NASA trying to publish things to the public somewhere.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And he edited and wrote.
Also, he was trying to force the web designers to add the word theory every single time the Big Bang was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to cover up various research into the Big Bang.
Can we freaking leave? Theory means awesome. God damn it.
Yeah, but he doesn't like the fact, apparently, that Big Bang is asserted as a fact, blah, 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 blah. It's no different than the intelligent design bollocks going on.
God damn it. The colloquial meaning of the word theory is not equal to the scientific meaning. The scientific meaning means, holy crap, it's a theory, it's true. And the colloquial meaning is, in theory.
So basically, the short version of this is that this guy dropped out of college, was appointed by Bush to NASA, used by Bush in NASA to cover up research that went against what the administration was trying to do, and then he got caught and was forced to resign.
Isn't he just like a 23, 24-year-old guy?
He's a 24-year-old punk who didn't graduate from college.
So he's about as old as we are.
And
I think I read somewhere that like he pretty much went from writing for the college newspaper articles about video games to being the NASA guy.
Well, in the FARC thread about this, people pointed out a lot of other interesting appointments Bush has made in his tenure. And he's appointed a lot of young punk kids to very high-level positions in our government.
Really? Maybe that's why things suck.
Yeah, that might be part of it. I mean, look at recent ones. Brown, the head of FEMA.
Yeah, I was just going to say him.
That guy was an expert in horses, and yet he ended up being the disaster manager of the whole country. Yeah, way to go there. We saw what a colossal fuck-up he was.
Yeah.
Harriet Myers, he tried to get on the Supreme Court, who had absolutely no experience whatsoever.
As a judge, at least.
Yeah.
She was a lawyer, which
Granted, honestly, very few Supreme Court justices were actually judges at any point before being on the court.
Yeah, she was at least a lawyer, so that was something. But it was his personal lawyer.
It was his personal lawyer.
That's like me trying to make my physician the Surgeon General.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little fishy. You know,
there's all sorts of them. Like, apparently some young, I think it was a 25-year-old kid, was appointed to some high-up contractor something position, and he was flying around Iraq in, like, military jets.
Mm-hmm.
So, at least this one had a happy ending, because the guy probably would have been able to stay in and do all of his evil crap, except that he had to lie about going to college.
No, wait, if this is a job that is appointed by the president, as opposed to, you know, some other hiring mechanism... Isn't Bush just going to appoint some other idiot in the place?
I don't know.
Does it need some sort of congressional or something approval?
I don't think there's any congressional oversight for things like this.
No, no approval by anyone, no committee anywhere or anything?
Honestly, I really don't know.
Yeah, maybe they should look into that. I mean, it seems like...
You know what? Maybe they should at least actually read the kid's resume. I mean, when I get jobs, they call RIT and ask, hey, did this guy graduate? And RIT says, yep, he did.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like a lot of appointments... like are just made by the executive branch and no one else looks at it. And that's something that should be fixed.
I mean,
like,
I guess the scary thing
at
is
at least
that
have some committee look at it.
If this guy hadn't lied about college, then there would have been no problem because he hasn't done anything illegal. He's just done things that were boneheaded and stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You should also be fired if you're boneheaded and stupid.
So, things of the day, I don't know how many of you out there have actually played Zelda's Adventure for the Philips CD-i.
I never played it, but it is infamous.
But I played it at a Sears, Sears store a long time ago. They used to have demos of all these things. And there's a video on Google Video that I discovered that kind of brings back that whole horrible experience. It's a video of the actual gameplay from the Philips CD-i version of Zelda.
Wow. I never thought I'd see that.
There's more to the game. There's a lot of, like, FMVs and such. But basically what you'll get out of this is that, one, the game's terrible. Two, there are load times between every single screen.
Well, that was when back in the day when they had 1X CD-ROMs. That's what happened.
Yeah, I remember dealing with that in, like, Under a Killing Moon with its 4 CDs or Phantasmagoria with its 7. But
all I gotta say is this game looks exactly like a really bad version of Dink Smallwood or other shitty Windows 95 games.
Oh my god. I mean, to this day, I'll bet Nintendo just wants to kill itself over giving Philips the right to make a Zelda game.
I don't even know if Nintendo... what were they thinking? I don't know.
They were forced to. They didn't want to give it away, and they hated doing it, but they had to because of a license agreement with Philips.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should go check in all the details on that one.
I used to know all the details, but basically it had to do with the fact that Nintendo and Philips were going to collaborate to make a CD extension for a Nintendo system.
But that was Sony and Nintendo. That's how the PlayStation was born.
You know, Sony Philips?
No, Philips isn't Sony. No way.
No, there's this whole... I mean, they're all separate companies, but there's kind of an incestual relationship when it comes to the technology involved.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up that Philips in this case, had the right to use licensed characters from Nintendo games for a set period of time. Right. And Nintendo was obligated to honor that.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo did not want them to make this game, but they had no choice.
Nintendo should at least stipulated the game didn't suck.
Yeah, that's not
It doesn't
Nintendo's
matter,
because
the game is now just some scary part of history that no one remembers or cares about. So.
Yeah, though it is eerie that the Nintendo Revolution controller, on a superficial level, looks a lot like the Philips CD-i controller.
Except for the fact that the Nintendo Revolution controller is useful, and the CD-i controller is not.
Well, hence I said in a very superficial
way.
Didn't
the CD-i controller have this giant yellow ball in it?
It wasn't yellow.
It had this giant ball in it. It wasn't. I don't think it was like the Revolution controller. Now that I remember,
in terms
it.
Of that, it looked like a remote control.
I think it was only vertical. I don't know. Was it even vertical?
Yes, it was vertical. There might have been different ones, but the one I played was vertical and terrible and hard to hold.
I'll have to go check it out because I remember there being like this giant ball or that you spun around or something.
I know the Intellivision had that. It had the big black disc.
No, this is a big yellow ball, like round. Maybe I'm just remembering something else. I have to go look it up.
So in that brief interlude, I showed Scott a picture of the Philips CDI controller, and he was indeed remembering something else.
I was remembering something else with a big yellow ball, and I have to go look it up and find what the hell it is.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know either now. I thought it was the Philips CDI. I guess it isn't.
Yeah, so anyway, your thing of the day, you can talk about it just because we both found it, and I think everyone on the internet has found it because it's really cool, but...
Yeah, so this guy in Mexico City is a helicopter pilot. Which is not a bad job. Takes some skills. Respectable. And he goes around taking aerial photos, which is cool. You know, aerial photos. Nice. Especially when there's stuff that, you know, can't see from the ground, like big, giant stuff. You know, whatever. And he goes around taking pictures of things. But the thing in Mexico City, everything is apparently awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Mexico City, after looking at these pictures, looks like an interesting place to live.
He took a picture of the biggest bullfighting arena in the world. And it wasn't full of people. It had a bunch of people in it, but it wasn't full. But apparently it's very impressive when it's full, and I could imagine so now that I've looked at it.
There's a building that has a giant Wieslowski from Monsters, Inc. on the roof.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but there were many, many apartment buildings that were like extra fancy, and there were like extra fancy country clubs, and... Some of the greatest pictures were like, you know, in a movie, they're like a Mexican drug lord who has like this tiny little island mansion that always looks like something that no one lives in.
They're all over the place.
He took a picture of like three of these things. One of them looked like a castle and had a boat at it. And I was like, holy crap.
My favorite one, and I got to say, well, there were two about this, but
yeah, those
this
are
is
the
something
best.
The U.S. really needs. And that Mexico, for all its problems, Mexico really looks like they're trying to take care of their less well-off people.
Well, at least in the Mexico City area. What do you get, you know, out in the desert?
Yeah, whatever, out in the desert.
Bandits. But
low-income housing, like massive, massive, massive tracts of identical yet brightly colored houses. These pictures look fake. They look like CG.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the picture, I was like, what, is this CG from like The Sims or something? What is this?
No, it's real and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's like this is picture from the sky of just like miles upon miles of just grids of streets with identical houses perfectly evenly spaced from each other in like these flat, bright colors.
Brightly, brightly colored.
And
very neat.
It's so, you know, uniform that it looks like a computer-generated image. It doesn't look real. Even the cars look fake in the setting, you know, but it's real and it's pretty cool.
It seems like just Americans have this aversion to low-income housing, which to me is a crock because I think that really people deserve to have a place to live.
And if you want one.
Well, the fact that the two of us, we're fairly highly paid professionals, and yet it's real hard to find affordable housing freaking anywhere in this country where there are jobs.
Yeah, it's like it's easy to find a house. You can get a house in the middle of the boonies. But to get a house near a place where you can work... You either have to live in some terrible, terrible place, or you have to live for a lot of money.
Well, we live in the burbs of New York City, basically. We live out on the commuter line, you know.
We're beyond the burbs. We're in, like, the outskirts.
Yeah, but at least we're still on the commuter rail
line. We are
on
the commuter line. We're not,
But the thing is, even out here, there's a lot of people have big houses that are separated by a lot of land and sprawl and... It's set up to where there's absolutely no way you could actually have public transportation, and the roads are all long and windy and full of cars, and there's all this wasted space that really could have been used for actual affordable housing.
Yeah, it's like along the side of the highways, there's a bunch of trees, right? And I understand the trees are to keep sound and stuff from bothering everyone. But if you just put houses in the way, houses work as well as trees. And
what?
Poor...
No, see, that's... Because people don't want to live next to a highway. That's
poor
terrible.
People don't care. They're poor.
No, I'm just talking about... Like, there's a... I don't know if you've seen it, but between here and IBM, there's this big subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
And the subdivision is full of giant freaking million-dollar McMansions.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, people who buy them are even getting ripped off because they're really condos, even though you get the whole house. And you don't own the land. It's just a giant scam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what this area needs. This area needs some affordable, nice, actually livable low-income housing. Because honestly, people like us want low-income housing. I don't really need a mansion. I'd like a mansion. I'd like a manor house and a butler, but I'm not going to get one.
Yeah, all I really need the house for is a place to sleep, shower, and put my stuff, and plug into utilities and such, you know?
Well, and occasionally to have a sexy party.
Well, occasionally a sexy party, but, you know, if I had to, if my house was cheap enough, I could get, you know, that extra monies to have sexy parties and party houses and ballrooms and things.
Yeah, the problem is it seems like people who have larger houses or who lived before, you know, sprawl came really are overprotective of their property values.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with this property value nuttiness.
Honestly, unless you want to move from where you live someday and your house is only an investment, I'm not saying that low property values are good, but you don't want your property value to rise steadily because you know what rises along with that? Property taxes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're a renter, if you're a guy who owns a bunch of places and rents them out, you don't really care what the property value is because, you know, you care the property tax is low because, you know, you can charge rent whatever you want. You know, so I don't know why those people want property value to go up unless they're the only people who really care, the people who are in the business of buying and selling houses like crazy or people who plan to move. And
you know who else cares? People who live in subdivisions and are members of homeowners associations who don't understand how the property value actually affects them and don't want their neighbor to have his grass too long.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Or, you know, the people who don't want wind power plants near them or don't want cell towers but still want cell service. We could do a whole episode on those people.
Goddamn.
Yeah.
Frickin' as far as I'm concerned, they should just eminent domain land wherever there is no cell signal and put the most powerful tower they possibly can.
Hey, if I own the land we live on right now, I'd totally call up Verizon or Sprint and say, hey, you can put a cell tower on my roof if you'll pay for the electricity it uses.
Yeah.
And maybe give me a free cell phone.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I actually read that on the outskirts of a lot of cities, cell phone companies will do that. If you own land, they'll pay you a nice rent forever. And they'll give you free cell service if you let them put a tower in your area.
I would totally go for that. I'd get the infinite data, infinite minutes, and then I'd get the fanciest phone, and I'd be all set.
Yeah? Well, like our friend Scott Johnson, his parents' house, they put a little, like, gas, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's like a little gas compressor something station on their land. And it's near the house, but it doesn't make any noise, and it's far away. And as a result, the gas company pays them quite a decent sum per month to keep it there.
Hmm. Not bad.
Yeah.
I should, like, buy a house with, like, a big piece of land off to the side of it and then just sell that land to whoever and just have this little area next to my house full of crap.
Well, that land has to actually be useful. I mean, you have to actually be in a place where people want to pay you to put stuff on your land.
Oh, yeah, it'll be between my house and the neighbor's house.
It depends if they need a cell tower there. I mean, luckily, where we live now, I mean, there's a mountain outside my window and I can see the cell tower I use because it's right there.
Yeah, we get pretty good signal here. I don't get signal at my new office.
I didn't get signal when I lived in the other mountains up in Poquay back in the day. I didn't get such good signal when I lived in Fishkill, but I think that was because I lived in an old French-style apartment, and it was, I think the walls were just made of solid, horrible death or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if you get cell signal in Mexico.
I don't know, but you know what? I'd be able to find affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the main thing you'll get out of this is that Mexico City, I mean, Mexico's not a third world country.
We should go to Mexico City for vacation.
You want to?
Why not?
All right, we can go to Mexico.
We'll just fly there.
I got to get my passport all fixed up before we head down.
Mine's all good.
Yeah, my passport, I need it to be renewed and such.
You're going
to
get the RFID, maybe.
You going to nuke it?
You have to get your tinfoil wallet.
Or just put your passport in the microwave for 30 seconds.
You know, you could eat one of those, like, Easy Pass bags that doesn't let Easy Pass go off if you put it in your glove box.
Any Faraday cage will do it.
Yeah. Go for it.
But anyway, since it's anime day, we should probably talk a little bit about anime.
Well, good. We just watched two animes.
Yeah, we
crazy anime.
Oh, my God. So we watched episode one of an old anime made in 1995 called Ninku.
N-I-N-K-U, as in ninja, but without the ja and with the ku instead.
Imagine a Naruto Cromartie, I guess.
That's the best we can come up with.
With a little bit of Jibaku with that penguin, and it's farting.
Okay, so, oh my God, this show is about this little kid. Okay, no. Let's start before that. All it's right, about so this world where there are ninku, which are like this ancient secret order of awesome, powerful ninjas.
12 awesome, powerful ninjas.
Well, they're 12 clans of powerful ninjas.
Yeah, there weren't so many of them, though, and they held off. I thought it was just 12 guys, but they held off the Imperial Army. I think it was 12 guys.
All right.
It showed 12 guys.
Okay, then maybe they had descendants, I think.
I don't know, whatever.
Whatever, but they're basically the ninja-ness works almost identically to Naruto ninja-ness.
Only in such a stupid, over-the-top way.
I mean, let me tell you, there was a scene where the guy did the same, you know, rapid set of hand gesture things they do in Naruto. Like, straight out of Naruto. Of course, Naruto was straight out of this, because this came out in 95. And then they spent, like, an entire minute with a frozen image while some guy explained the entire ninja technique, like, in many, many words.
Yep, and a giant kanji was, like, flashing on the screen.
I didn't even read any of those words because I was too busy going, oh my god, he's explaining the technique, oh my god.
Now, the opener to the show, I mean, at first they do this bit, they talk about these ancient whatevers, and they fought off the Imperial Army, and they're dangerous and cool.
Mm-hmm.
So the opener starts, and we think, all right, this is going to be a show about dangerous guys. And then the opener proceeds to have probably the ugliest thing I've ever seen in anime.
The main character is just hideous and painful to look at. Like, you want to kill yourself.
Did someone open the Ark of the Covenant? I can't look at you.
I mean, like, Naruto is painful to watch for a long time because you get these 15-episode fights. But imagine if Naruto was ugly and had giant eyeballs and his tongue stuck out and his cheeks were flappy and...
We're not kidding. The kid's creepy looking. Like, Ringu creepy looking. Like, I don't want him looking at me.
But he has his pet penguin that's funny.
Yeah.
It's actually a friend penguin, not a pet.
Yeah, they make a point of saying that.
Yeah.
This show is every freaking cliche ever. It's a boy who his mother's kidnapped, and he, like, tries to stop the guy who's going to kidnap his mother. And then the guy pulls the whole, oh, if you want revenge, then become stronger and come after me. And walks away. And then, you know, you meet someone and, oh, let's be friends. Oh, I'll be your friend. And then they get kidnapped, and then, oh, he'll save. And then he saves her. And oh, my God.
Yeah, so you might be wondering how this tiny, tiny, he looks like a six-year-old, but I don't think he is, little kid saves people from evil.
Well, he quite literally kicks their asses.
Yeah, basically, it turns out in the first episode, they reveal that the main character, the ugly little kid, is actually a crazy powerful ninku, former ninku, commander, whatever, from some clan. And he has magic ninja powers. He does the turning into a log trick.
Yeah, it's funny because you know the typical scene where there's a whole bunch of guys with guns and then there's one guy on the other side and the one guy charges and somehow beats them all?
Mm-hmm.
That scene happens, except the kid charges them and they open fire and he gets riddled full of bullets and blood and falls over dead.
But it's a log.
Oh, it turns into a log just like in Naruto.
It's the old ninja trick. Well, Naruto, he turns into a log just like in Ninku, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show is kind of funny, but kind of painful to watch.
If the main character wasn't ugly, I would say the show is basically Naruto 5 years ago with the funny penguin.
Yep, and a little bit of Cromarty. There's a lot of Cromarty-type dialogue.
Yeah, the dialogue is very Cromarty. Not much else is, but
no.
The dialogue is definitely Cromarty style.
If anything, watch the opener, because if you see a full-grown woman riding a penguin as it flies, and the penguin's a normal sized penguin. In fact, it's a little penguin.
It's a little penguin.
I don't know what to say about this show.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch any more of it, that's
no,
for sure.
No.
But the penguin, two or three times during the episode, farts in order to fend off enemies. And it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all you got to say about that.
I guess the show is trying to be funny. I can't imagine that the show is actually serious.
I think it might be funnier if you had, like, an anime club to watch it with.
Yeah, if we showed that to an anime club, they would have gone nuts.
You couldn't watch more than one episode, though, because it totally wouldn't keep going.
It's like a bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo.
Yeah, exactly.
One episode is awesome, two episodes is shit.
Yeah. Of course, after 2 minutes, he can't look at the kid anymore, but he's the main character.
Oh,
so.
God, Ark of the Covenant, yeah.
Ark of the Covenant. Ninku. Yeah.
The other show we watched was real short, and it's Masuda Kosuke Theater, Gag Manga Biori.
I think it's like, it's a gag.
Yeah, like gag manga.
Like a gag, a joke, you know, a practical joke, a gag. Gag Manga Biori. Of course, they say Gagyu because they can't, I don't know, it's a Japanese pronunciation of gag, I don't know.
It's funny. It's short and it's funny. You know, I'm not really sure what to think because it went by so fast.
Yeah, it's, let's see, the first bit is this guy who's in charge of a company. And
he's talking really fast constantly, as in he's not breathing, he's just talking.
Yeah, it's just talking, and then eventually that bit's over.
And it's like little joke, and each one of them's not that funny, but they keep hitting you with them, and you just like have this rolling chuckle through the whole thing. And then at the end, it hits you with this 1-2-3 punch of three actually really funny jokes in a row. And by the end, I was just hysterical.
Yeah, I laughed a lot.
The sticker, oh my God.
Yeah, so it starts off with this guy, he's yelling at his board of directors at the company, at a snack company, they make snacks, about the stickers that come in the snacks, because that's how they sell them to kids.
And oh my God, the stickers are just three very similar pictures of this depressed-looking, like, 8-year-old.
Right, so then he has them change them, and then he has them change the stickers again, and he keeps going. And they show, when they turn the camera to the board of directors, it's like, what was it? Chain-wielder?
Bear killer or something?
Yeah, there were like four people, and it put their names and their occupation, and it
was
like...
Yeah, we really can't explain the humor. You just have to watch this.
Yeah, it was like so-and-so the bear killer, and he was covered in like these scratch marks from bear claws. And another guy was like so-and-so the chain-wielder, and he had chains wrapped around him. And
that has nothing to do with what
Yeah,
was
there
going
were other
on.
Characters, but that was just craziness. So then, eventually, like, the kid in the pictures appears and starts stepping on the director's foot. And then they take a sticker and put it on his car, and he tries to peel it off, and it doesn't come off. And oh my God.
Yeah, that may not sound funny, but oh my God, go to Anime Ski and get this show and watch one episode. It's not long.
There are actually four episodes, and I'm getting 2, 3, and 4 right now.
Yeah, it's just too... I really can't describe it. It's hilarious.
I don't think the quality of it is the highest quality, but the... hilarity factor, at least in the first episode. You should at least watch the first episode. I haven't watched any more because you will laugh. And a quick, easy laugh, why not? Of course, it's the crazy, wacky kind of humor. I know some people
yeah, I mean, if you like Cromartie or Excel or anything weird like that, you freaking love this show.
Yeah, but if you're not into the weird stuff, if the weird stuff just makes you go, huh, what's going on? Then you could probably forget about this one.
Yeah, this is not a show for people who aren't into anime, I guess.
I don't think it really is so much anime.
Or at least have some kind of vague, dim understanding of Japan at
Maybe.
All.
I guess. The second one might relate to people if you know what Pokemon is.
Yeah, Dokima.
If you know anything about Pokemon at all, like if you know it exists and there are monsters in it, then the second half of the episode will amuse you.
But this definitely doesn't pass the street test. If you showed this to some random schmuck on the street, they wouldn't have any words to say to you to express how they felt, I don't think.
Yeah. They might just go, what the hell? That was freaking fucked up, man. So, if you've been to our website, you can agree it's a little bit ugly, just a little bit.
Yeah, basically, when we installed WordPress way back, it came with, like, four themes.
No, it didn't come with four themes.
No, you installed a bunch
of themes. It comes with two themes, the classic and the default, and I installed a bunch from
this. Yeah, we installed a bunch, and they were all crappy, and the one we picked was the least crappy of them, and we don't like it at all.
Yeah, it has some problems with it. Like, I don't like how, you know, the way you figure out there are comments on a post is based on the number next to the title, and...
Yeah,
it's just
also
not
the
great.
Fact that this theme doesn't do the WordPress stuff 100% correctly.
Yeah, it's like...
Like, I had to do some terrible futzing with it to make it display the links on the right properly.
The other thing is I want to disable commenting on the blog part by people other than us.
Yep, no offense to you guys. It's just that we want discussion to be in the forum, and we're going to use the comments mostly for things like, well, in this episode, Scott was sick. Or, well, we got to clarify that it was actually this thing and not this thing. You know,
yeah, just things we don't want to appear in the description of the podcast itself. And
so basically errata.
Yeah, but if I enable that feature that disables comment, if I enable the disabling of commenting, hey, then the comment box still appears and some people might be confused and try to use it. So I have to change the theme so that doesn't happen. So basically I'm making a whole new theme and it's going to look a lot like the default theme in the forums. Because I actually looked at the style for the forums, and the guy's like, yeah, you can use this if you give me credit. So I'm going to basically be hacking away at CSS stuff for...
Yep. for now. And later on, we're still working. We got some artist friends trying to help us make some good logos for Geek Nights, better than our neon sign that
was
thrown together.
Yeah, if we can get like a square picture that looks really good, you know, for a Geek Nights logo, then we could use that to label our MP3s with and label our feed with it.
And also eventually make our theme a very customized, cool-looking thing with some sort of theme to it other than just color.
Yeah. You know, cool stuff like that.
Yeah, that's all just in the works, so just be warned that the site may change a little bit as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
If any of you out there feel particularly artistically inclined, give us a ring. We can provide you with whatever reference photos you'd need. And I guess the only reward we could offer you is that we'd credit you if we used anything you gave us.
Yeah, we'll credit anyone who gives us anything. If you're also, if you're musically inclined, make like, you know, if you made like little bumper musics for us or
a little guitar riff, a little jazz riff.
Anything like that that might be useful for us, you know, maybe. What do we need? We need something to go like after the thing of the day, maybe. Or
no, we need something before our main bits. We'd like to have a different thing for every type of main bit. Like anime day will be an anime thing and whatever.
Yeah, someone made like anime music for the anime day. Like a different theme for each day of the week.
But definitely following in the theme of Geek Nights, you know, a late show. Jazzy kind of late show music.
Yeah. All right. Also, join the forums. A lot of people have joined the forums like we tell them to. Do stuff in there. Like, say something.
Well, honestly, the forums have been rocking mostly. Just the last couple days, they've been a little slow. But normally, there's a lot of people in there. There have been some really good arguments. I'm real pleased with you people.
Yeah. So,
keep it up.
Yeah. And all you other people.
Join them.
Yeah. What are you doing? I know you're not a member of any other forum on the internet.
I've noticed over time that the segment of listeners that's rising the most is iTunes people who probably have never even seen the website.
Yeah. Go to frontrowcrew.com. You can throw a www at the beginning if you want.
Yeah, doesn't matter though. We only have one server.
Yeah, so frontrowcrew.com.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcast, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.